When did the fretboard start to unlock for you?
What are we getting wrong with the cage system?
If I do a Mayer-related thing, that's going to work. Hendrix works.
There's a John Mayer quote. It says, Tim Fagan is a winner.
They answer. I'm like, who's this? He's like, this is John Mayer. Really? I was introduced to someone who was managing Colby Calais.
Because you wrote Lucky, Jason Mraz.
Isn't that the best trick ever?
Yeah.
Today's episode is sponsored by Gator Cases. Guitarists, like any other musician, value the advantages of proper protection for their gear. Guitars, amps, effects, and accessories all need safe transport and storage. Luckily, Gator's got you covered.
Tim Fagan on the podcast. Dude, thanks for being here.
It's a thrill.
Absolutely.
This is really cool because, so I do my show, and I think you commented on one of my videos that I did.
Oh, yeah.
And somebody, a friend of mine was like, because I was going through the comments, and a friend of mine was like, check this guy out. He's got a great channel. So I went through it, and you have all these great instructional.
Are they still your friend? Are they?
No. It was for other reasons, but okay. No. So then I went through the channel. I was like, you've got all these great instructional videos.
Oh.
And I said, we should have him on the show and do like a channel collab kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that's what this is.
Amazing.
Right here.
Yeah. I was sitting there in my robe in the middle of the night, saw one of your videos. I'm like, this guy, he's going to be huge. I was eating my Cheerios.
I just knew everything.
You had the spark. No, I'm just like knocked out that you invited me, and everything I've seen of yours is inspiring and fun. So yeah.
Far too kind. No, this is awesome. I'm pumped that you've come in. We can, talk about the horrors of running these YouTube channels and how difficult it is, but this is gonna be positive and uplifting.
Yes.
Tim, you have such a great approach to teaching guitar. There's no ego in it, which I love. Some of these guys on YouTube, there's too much ego. They think there's something crazy.
Yeah.
There's no ego.
I'm just hiding it.
Hiding it.
Yeah.
Well, that's the
below
same thing.
The surface, yeah.
When did the fretboard start to unlock for you? Like, when do you think you started to really figure out kind of what you were doing and what you were looking at? Was it a concept or was it a moment in time?
Yeah, it is kind of hazy because it's been many, many years. But I think just the combination of like laser focus, which is hard to come by no matter what age you're at. But like when I picked up a guitar as a teenager, there was just enough of that surge of like, this is what I want to do with my life. So that probably a lot of the details have melted away as far as like how I like broke down different chunks of the fretboard. And so now it's almost like reverse engineering. When I look at all of the strategies for teaching, I sort of feel like, did I think that way? Or did I just sort of luck out and just put in the 10,000 hours? But definitely, all that said, I think that people are right to point to triads as a way to just chunk down the fretboard. Because to me, when we learn those open chords on day one or day two or whatever it is, like when, you know, your buddy's like older brother like shows you an A chord and you're like, yeah, I got that. Like, what next? And you're just gobbling up those shapes. We imprint on them. And I don't think there's any reason that we can't do that again if we open up our mind to be like, all right, well, if I could learn that and just know that that's A, like, could I do that and just treat that shape as like one of those just go to as if it were an open chord. And so that, I think, has been something that I try to bring forward now is like, you can put in a little bit of work to make something automatic, and then it kind of disappears in a good way. It sort of just becomes second nature, you know?
But you have this video, I think, and maybe it was just to grab headlines, but I think it was something like what people misunderstand about the cage system.
Oh, yeah.
Or what people get wrong. What are we getting wrong
with
the cage system, Tim?
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of the triads.
I didn't know how to YouTube, so I just came in guns blazing and just tried to pick a fight with the cage system in general.
Yeah.
So I can't probably even pinpoint what it was that I was, you know, inciting a riot about the cage system. But in essence, I think one of the key takeaways is that caged is a lot. Like all five of those shapes in one sitting especially is way too much information. And so in a way, I would say there's absolutely nothing wrong whatsoever with caged. It's great. But for me, it feels a little bit like someone who's really passionate about the cage system is like someone who's really passionate talking about containers or Tupperware. It's like, great. Like, what's going in the containers? Like, what are you going to do with all those shapes? Because they're just like, they're really great areas to break down the neck, but then how you make it second nature is really where I think it starts to get fun. And so if I were to recommend that someone break down the cage system, it's like, just make it the G system for a while and then the E system and just become a bit of a fiend for like your favorite things about one of those shapes and then connect it to like the nearest neighbor so that then you practice going back, you know, so maybe it's the G and E system or something just for a while because the drinking from a fire hose syndrome happens a lot on YouTube where it's like, I'm going to watch the 1 hour video, the ultimate deep dive. And on Saturday, I'm going to do all of Caged. I promise myself. And then it kind of it gets a little overwhelming.
So what do you think, like who were, because I was blown away when I went into your community.
Oh, yeah.
And I made a little post and I was like, hey, I'm Zach. And all these people commented. And it's like, dude, you've got this incredible community on that you've built. What do you think people are trying to get out of your lessons? Is it just the triads and just a little bit of motion across the neck? And is that what you try to get across to them?
I think it's a big sneak attack in the best way where I will advertise with a flashing neon arrow whatever is going to move people to play more guitar. So if it's triads, if it's like, you know, poking some fun at the Caged system and then actually teaching it, whatever it is to sort of like get some people to just stop and think about how they want to bring guitar more into their life. And so that when they join the community, my proudest moment now these days is seeing a brand new member getting welcomed by all these amazing people that have been with us for a few months. And then that same new member, maybe 2 days later, is welcoming in an even newer member. And they just have this enthusiasm, mainly about the fact that they're just playing more guitar. And so they might come in with a list of like, I got to learn this, I got to learn that. And we'll get to that. But for the first step, it's just picking up the guitar, hopefully every day, but also just not getting down on ourselves when we have a gap in our practice schedule. Because as grownups, most of us are like adults with these adulting brains. And we're like, oh, I blew it. I miss, you know, Wednesday and Thursday. So what's the point? I shouldn't even bother. And if I can get people to just jump back in the water, then whatever the topic of the day or the week is, they'll take a bite out of that. But they just mainly have to have that momentum going, which is, it's happening. It's fun.
What did you think? Because you started this channel about a year ago.
Yeah.
What did you think you were going to contribute to the YouTube space where there are so many guitar teachers? Like, did you have this idea that you thought I could do this my way, which would be a little different? Like, what did you think that was that you would bring to the tone of it? Into the lessons.
A little bit of goofiness, a little bit of tongue-in-cheek, and like it's turned out to be a bit of that where I led off with my first video, and it's gotten some comments as being like, what is this, Blues Clues, or a little bit what I was saying, kind of that twisted
sort of... You
do
have that kind of Blues Clues Steve vibe, but I feel like I have a little bit of that vibe,
too. We're the kind guys, and it's like, don't be fooled, that guy's like working really hard and stressing every detail, and just a little bit of like, none of this is that serious, and it does come back to like, if you can be laughing about it and also being in the running to like feel some like passion about it. Sometimes we get a little bit too, everything's sort of neutral because nobody wants to get beat up in the comments, whether it's a fellow commenter or someone creating. And if you can dare to just be like, you know what? I love this. I'm going to lean in. Or you know what? Like this really moves me. This gets me emotional, like the way that this person plays. And if I'm willing to sort of do a bit of that and sort of show my cards, hopefully that just literally lets people know that the water's fine to like just be a bit that way in their playing as well, you know?
Right. Yeah. So, okay, so what's the first lesson?
Yeah, we got the guitars here, Zach.
What's the first lesson, Tim, that you were like, I'm starting this channel. This is what everybody needs to know about guitar.
Yeah.
If they're coming to the instrument, maybe they've got a little bit, they've played a little bit, but they're sort of figuring out like, what is it, the triads, Tim? What's the first lesson?
I took some triads into the recipe and I basically was like... And right away, I was just with my first video on YouTube. I was just pretty much talking and playing and being like, I like this triad. I like that one too.
That Keith Richards.
Yeah, I use these all the time. And what I was trying to show was like, here's what we'll learn specifically. But also, I'm declaring like, I dig this. So I'm going to just dig in until I can play it everywhere. And there's going to be other triads. There's going to be other shapes that I have to master. But for right now, I'd be like, how do I find this one? And what does that give me? It's like, oh, I can think of it as a 1 to a 4. I could think of it as just like a staying on a pedal tone, like just staying on one chord and kind of just playing that game of sort of tension and release. So that was my bit of sort of chutzpah to be like, all right, let's just focus on this for now. You're going to get your bite-sized lesson, and you're also going to have a bit of just like, oh, that's cool. And if you leave a video saying like, oh, that's cool, you're like one step closer to grabbing your guitar versus like the other way is like, oh, maybe I'll watch another video, and then your guitar sort of slides off the couch.
Yeah,
you
know,
you sort of hunker down, and the hours slip
by. What are you capturing where you said, what did you just say? What makes you not watch another video?
For me, that moment where we are watching a video on guitar, we sit down with a lot of inspiration, and the video is so good that it gets us thinking, oh, I need to watch another one of a video on that topic.
Yeah.
Because YouTube's really good at that. And if you're watching on YouTube right now, you're going to get recommended a really great video after this, and hopefully it'll be a Guitar for Tim video or another Zach video. And you can go on a really fun binge of watching videos about playing guitar. And a little bit of the sort of, you know, the news flash is like, you know, watching videos about playing guitar is not playing guitar. And that moment that you went into that mode of, I'm going to sit down and play something today, you got to notice when you've hit that light bulb moment or that thing that gets you excited and stop there. Close the laptop, turn off your phone, whatever, and then just grab the guitar. And if you can do that, then you can come back and get another scoop of inspiration. But we all get caught in that loop where we consume more than we create. And that's something that I even try to keep in mind as I make these videos. It's like, all right, at what point is the tank full? And now I have to go make another thing about it or play another riff about it, you know?
So you don't feel like I got to constantly be churning out videos. Like, you feel like you might be okay with the amount of videos you have. And then when you feel like there's an opening to put something else out, then you'll lean into it. Is that?
Yeah. Yeah. And because there's times where sometimes I'm just busy or lazy or distracted, just like anyone else, and I don't hit the mark. I'm like, oh man, I need to put out, the algorithm said so. I got to put one out or 2 a week. And I'd love to hear what your experience has been with that, as far as like, at what point are you driving the engine or is the engine driving you? But for the most part, when I get inspired about a topic, I know I'm on the right track when it feels like it could be two or three videos, when it's like, oh, I could get on this whole theme, and then I get a wave of like, okay, I could work on this for the next month or so, and then I'll usually get into a batch mindset of like, I'll do a batch of shorts on this, and then I'll see which ones perform well as shorts, and I'll use that as ideas for the long form videos, you know?
Right. But what performs the best? Because anything that I put in with Jimi Hendrix performs great. If I had this video, it was like Oz Noy talks about Jimi Hendrix.
Boom. Right.
That video blew up.
What's Hendrix playing?
Like what is that? Why do we love that?
If I do a Mayer related thing, that's gonna work. Hendrix works. And that is as the people that make guitar videos watch other people that help YouTubers make better videos in general, that concept of, you know, social hacking is kind of the term for it, as far as like, you know, leveraging someone else's face and their impact. And there can be a real tasteful way to do it. And I've definitely tried it. It's an experimentation. I consider it the spaghetti test of like, I've had waves where I go more high effort videos where I do a lot of editing to have a lot of jokes and animations. And I love those. But sometimes it's like, wow, I can do about one of those a month. And I might come back to some of that. I'm now more in the mindset of like, if I can just consistently show up, like when you see how often, you know, Uncle Larry and Guthrie show up, and really that consistency of 2, 3, 4 videos a week where it can be just like very matter of fact, just sitting and playing and being themselves, that has, I think, growing more and more charm and like pull for their audience. And that's actually more of where I'm trying to head, which is like, just to speak to the people that are already digging what I'm doing and giving them more. So they feel like they're hanging out with me, because that's like my most natural state. That's what the community is starting to feel like. So I'd like it to match the YouTube version as well.
Right. Yeah. Totally. Can you give us one way that we're going to pull in the lessons a little bit?
Let's do it. I want to learn from you. We're going to be licks.
Okay. We could trade a little licks.
Okay.
Here, we're going to start off really simple. Okay. Yeah. Show us like a little basic way using some triads to maybe get from like a 1 chord to a 4 chord.
Great.
Like something really simple.
Yeah. What's so simple about this, and I love it when I get to point out things where people are like, oh my God, you just changed my life. I'm like, well, it was there all along. It's like you had the wings all along. But like a simple bar chord, if we're on G, like probably the first bar chord we ever learned based off the 6th string, like, just the fact that we might not know that like triads are literally living right there, and just knowing how to cluster them as far as like the top 3 strings of that shape, that's a triad right there. and just isolating it and playing it like that so that we can grab that as if it's just a tiny chord. It's great. And then the next three strings down, that next group of strings, 2, 3, 4, you've got another proper triad in there. So like we're already hitting gold with something we've been holding all along.
You've got
like that.
You've got every triad.
Yeah.
Right in here.
Yeah.
Ready to go. And then.
Right.
Right there if you grab that one. Yeah,
right,
yeah, yeah.
Right. And sometimes it's just a, like, oh, I never thought of that, or I just never like played it separately. And sometimes people are like, well, I'm holding it. Can't I just hold it? I was like, yeah, but look at what you can do if you break it off into a smaller grip right there, then you can go straight to the nearby four chord and you have this really cool shape, which has a totally different sound than if we were doing that, playing a full rich
right.
chord, which is what we like about triads. They're much more lean and agile and they can fit well when someone else is playing bass or if there's another person in your guitar strumming group who's like leaning in heavy on the open chords, you can suddenly now break off and play these things that are just, they sing. And so if you have this idea that the bar chord is hiding a bunch of triads right there inside of it, then that 1 to 4, you can see that coming out of that C chord. You can reverse engineer these triads most of the time and not get too overwhelmed with like these diagrams that have all the dots at once. And I'm a dots guy. I put the dancing dots on screen with my MIDI guitar and all that, but it's hopefully with the intent of like breaking it down in these pieces so that you can just start to see like, oh yeah, that's my new, like if I have a G chord written on a chart or it pops into my head, I've got some other flavors for that that I can just purely test out. And then you can just start to feel like, oh yeah, this one might not be as familiar to a beginner, but it's another one of these shapes where it's like, if you know the full chord, you're just sitting on top
that's
of
that's your
like,
C-shaped.
Yeah, the C-shaped sort of
in the
chord.
Cage system
right, right.
is what that is. Yeah,
I
yeah.
was it was going to go unnamed, but you're right. I can see.
If we're going to let the record be
the
known.
The Tupperware is yes. shaped as a C.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I love it. I lean into the Cage system and don't hate me. But yeah, you've got this triad right here and another one right there. And then just testing kind of what I was mentioning in that first YouTube video I did is like just touching, hitting those nearby go-to chords like the 1 and the 4 and just being like, can I find the 4 chord? Great. And it's guitar. The beauty of guitar is that we can move things around anywhere we want. Piano players have to like do a different calculation every time they transpose.
Right.
And we get the luxury and sometimes it results in a bit of a blind spot because we're like, yeah, I got that shape wherever I need it. But you have to actually run it through its paces to be like, all right, pop quiz, you're in the middle of a song. Can I find that one that looks like a little D shape or a little piece of the C shape when I need it on a G? And that's where when we do our workouts together, it's like root name recall is something that we warm up with a lot. And it's very simply like, you know, recalling roots and naming them. You know, if I call out, you know, 7th fret, 6th string, people need to get there and say right. it and play it because the song speed is going to be a real test. You know, you can have it, you know, and you can be totally smooth when you're playing on your own. But the moment that the song is playing, or oftentimes I find when I'm on a Zoom call with someone, the moment that I'm there saying like, all right, so show me where there's a B note on the 5th string. They're like, oh man. And it's like, everything's gone. It's like, I get it. But that's exactly why we just have to rinse and repeat with these
yes.
little, you know, quizzes,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah. But, for me, it was the, it was figuring out how to harmonize the triads up the scale.
Yeah.
So starting with this little G triad right here, the A minor, it'd be figuring this out.
Right.
And then when you get that, then you can, if you can visualize those triads up the neck, then you've got the oldest lick in the book, which
yeah.
is right there, big bass out of the triads. And then if you want to get to that 4 chord and you're all, or so if you go, now
right.
you're in the 4 chord. It's
right.
so simple. Like
it's
that's
so
the most
satisfying.
Basic thing ever. But
yeah.
like, that's when it started to unlock a little bit for me.
Yeah.
And when that starts to make sense, right?
Yeah. And how yeah, yeah. fun is that sound? Because it immediately sounds classic and familiar. And to be the person playing that, I remember when I was first playing along with like CCR, Greatest Hits, and it opens up with like the chords and all those great open chords that sound great. And then you have these licks like the... like Fortunate Son and everything, like immediately it was like, you mean I'm playing the lick that's in that song? It's like, yeah, because so many signature licks are based around those sixths. And as we were saying before we started, I think sixths is the hardest word to say, but it's like so fun to teach those because it's built into these larger shapes and you're really just taking notes away that you had all along.
Right.
So you got that triad, you take that, you know, middle note out of the way and you got this really nice airy kind of melodic thing that can be, it can move with the chords. It can also just be a lick on its own and sort of play against the chords. So yeah, those kinds of things are like very within reach, like they're very like quick wins, and then they can also open that door to the dreaded theory word, which can also, that's a big like room splitter as far as like caged and theory. And I just think the word theory itself connotes kind of like stuffy, like, well, it's just a theory, right? They haven't ever tested it.
It's never been proven.
It's just
a theory.
It's only a theory unless you use it, and it's usey all the time, every day. And so I just feel like that's like whatever gets you there. If a player has, you know, deep theory chops or none of it, but they're able to get to the destination in time for the song, for their style of playing, then that's great. So if someone wants to get really deep into theory, go for it, apply it, make sure you can recall it, you know, when you need it, and then it's good. Yeah.
The thing, Guthrie Trapp, not to name drop, he showed me this concept that I think is how he plays, and it's how I started playing kind of right after I sort of picked it off him.
Yeah.
Which was, if he's playing in something, let's say Mixolydian, which is really a major scale, flat seven,
right,
for anyone who's, you know, whatever. So he's never thinking about a Mixolydian scale. If he's in the key of A, he's thinking about an A triad and a G triad. And that's what he's visualizing,
right,
which gives you every note on the scale except for the sixth. Mm-hmm. And if you're playing an A chord, you can find your sixth right there.
Right.
And to visualize those pockets, so then you've got A, right? And you can visualize the chords, right, up the scale. Those pockets give you the scale up and down if you already know your triads,
right,
versus figuring out a Mixolydian lick or whatever. Yeah, see, I think you're trying to get me to play something, but
keep
I'm not.
Keep going, you're already doing it.
See, this is so. That's a little lick right there. Right there. Very simple. Does it, four chord? If you just grab that right out of this little, back to the one, and there's that G chord, and then now we can have some fun.
Yeah, all day.
And there's so much stuff too in the in the cowboy chords,
yeah,
where you
right,
or if you're in the key of B and you want to do that telly thing,
right,
it's so great right there in the triads, right?
Right,
which that's what it sounds so silly, but it's like, I feel like that's the only knowledge I have of the guitars, the triads, and how to use them appropriately.
Yeah. That's what I mean, is like in the internet era and trying to figure out what I want to teach, it's almost like, wow, people are really talking about triads. I'm like, yeah, I've always used them. I like them, but like maybe I've loved them all along, and they have been more of like the decoder ring of the whole fretboard. And so maybe rightfully so, they're getting their due as being like a buzzword that has a lot of substance to it. And then with what you're just playing there, it reminds me of the fact that I try to encourage people, whenever they hit something that brings in the open strings or things that are like inherently like guitar-y, just to lean into like the guitar-ness of E and all the things that can happen, like when you're playing things that have like chiming open strings or all these great, you know, like kind of like licks that sort of bring in like, and living in Nashville, there's so many tremendous players that incorporate that really clean open string and really playful energy of having these sort of like, you know, the sort of rubs of, like the things that can be like, you know, stretching out on otherwise simple sound and chord progressions, and then they just have these really cool cascading fills that I'm trying to scoop up more of. And I want people, when they're playing, to not get too studious, to think like, okay, I can do it here and here and there and there. It's like sometimes just hit something where you're like, I don't know what this is, but I like it. And like, yeah, I don't know. I just, am I an A or D? I don't know. It's like, but I just dig it. And when you know, like, if there's a moment in a song coming up where it's like, I'm going to do that thing that I don't know what it is, but I dig it, and I know that it works here, that's, I think, a powerful moment with guitar that you got to own, because that's really a substance of style where it's like, yeah, this is my thing. Like, I stole it from so-and-so, can't sound like them, so I sound like me, and there you are. You know,
this open string, like, right here in the key of E, this is such a great one that I feel like no one ever plays, and I've been playing this like my whole life. It's over this E7 sharp 9.
Yeah, the classic.
And you're just playing, you're skipping a string. You start on the E, hit the open G, go up the third, hit the open B.
Yeah.
and then hit the open. And then you can kind of, you can end it in a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
It's kind of right out of the chord.
Love it. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I mean,
it's so weird. Like,
and as it flies by, it's just.
Yeah, but it's funny too. Like, if you think about it in the context of this is so guitar-y. Yeah, yeah. And then you, yeah. Which is that triad right there,
right.
E minor triad, right?
Right, right.
Give a little bend.
Yeah, yeah.
Right
yeah.
there. Now.
Those, yeah, and it sets you up to then you kind of choose your own adventure because you hit the end of that lick and you can decide to go more, or you can like,
right,
or yeah, land it more major yes. and sweet,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And yeah,
and then you're in, the, and then you get your four chord and hit the A right there,
right,
easy,
right.
So, what's the takeaway? What's the takeaway here,
from
Tim?
From something like that,
yeah, yeah,
is
yeah,
like be an unabashed like. Nerd for the things you dig, because when I think back to when I was like practicing guitar in my room and staying home on Saturday nights, not as if there were invitations, but like as a teenager, just being like, I'm just going all in chasing some Stevie Ray licks or whatever it might have been, some Spin Doctors licks. That's right. I was way into the guitar.
Underrated.
Playing, really underrated guitar work.
And yeah, yeah, yeah.
Essentially
yeah.
a funk trio that you
yes.
know went
yeah,
pop.
Yeah.
But like when I was chasing those ideas down, I would find something that I dug. It would become almost my identity for like a week. Like the day that I learned the Jimi Hendrix chord, it's like, this is who I am. This is the way for
right.
a while.
Yeah, yeah.
And it allowed me to just not have any other distractions of the shiny objects of like, wait, but I'm not learning all the other inversions of it. It's like, nah, this is great. This is good. I'm just going to learn. Like, I'm going to do Pride and Joy. And it was just like such a happy moment. And so when I work with people and I try to encourage them, like, hey, if you have a lick like that, that is like a party trick or something, it can be a great way to launch into another phrase where you're mixing between being like, here's a go-to lick, here's my lifesaver lick. It's almost like just hitting a button in your head to play it. And then you land in a place where maybe you're sort of navigating like a more, you know, thoughtful move with moving with the chords and stuff like that. And I hope that helps demystify a little bit of what's going on in a player's head when they're improvising, because they're not making up everything by any means on the spot. They're usually going to some phrases that they like and then deciding how to stitch them together on the fly, which is really fun. It's just right. sort of like kind of surf between those options, but it's not like math equations the whole time. That would be
right,
no fun to listen to probably.
Yeah. Know? I was on your LinkedIn because I was trying
my
to
LinkedIn.
Like,
I
was
I
on
have
your
one.
LinkedIn,
thank
bro.
You for reminding me.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there's a John Mayer quote.
Yeah.
What does it say exactly? It says Tim Fagan is a winner.
Yeah.
What? How'd you get that quote from? Was that when you won a Grammy, or how'd you get that?
It was before. It was, and this is kind of a fun story. It really is, because like I had first moved to Los Angeles, like I was 25, and I was working at a software company, a part time, just day job, and it was all right. But it was my Dilbert phase where I'm just like trying to work on this software job and play covers gigs at night. And I had entered this songwriting contest that John Mayer had announced kind of out of the blue. He wrote a column for Esquire magazine around that time. And so he basically, in one of his columns, said, hey, calling all songwriters out there, professional, amateur, and otherwise, here's some lyrics I don't have any music for, or he called it like orphaned lyrics. Like these are lyrics that no longer have music. Write the music, send it in, we'll pick one winner, and we'll announce it in an upcoming issue. And so I sort of kept it to myself because I was like, just trying to like keep a low profile. I didn't tell anyone that I was like entering. I didn't want to sort of like get too
yeah,
much
right.
attention.
You didn't want to lose.
Yeah, I didn't want to lose. So I went into my like, all right, I got to like eye of the tiger. I got to like find my way in Los Angeles, because I was like, I had moved there from the Midwest. I was like, we got to get something going here. And so I had sent it off and truly put it out of my mind like a week, or actually about a month prior to this day, where I was sitting in my Honda Civic in the parking lot of Panda Express eating my like lunch with the engine off, with the radio off, just sitting there just like bumming, eating my sort of like, you know, fried rice. And the phone was ringing, and it was this 212 number that I had been ignoring all day. It was like calling for like the third time, and I was like, oh, it's got to be a bill collector or a credit card company. And so I finally answer it. I'm like, yeah, who's this? He's like, hey, is this Tim Fagan? I'm like, yeah, this is John Mayer.
No way. And it really was?
Yeah, and he kept, and he, to his credit, he kept calling until he could get me live on the phone and tell me that
I save his phone number.
No, it's funny. No, he's going through the Esquire main office, but they put him on the line and he starts singing the song that I had written the melody to, which is crazy. And I'm like suddenly sitting up straight and singing along with him. And he wanted to tell me that I had won the contest. He was sending me a signature John Mayer Strat, which they hadn't come out yet at that point. This was just before he had put out Continuum.
This was a Fender Strat.
Fender Strat.
Funny to think about.
I know, right? Back in the Fender days, for sure. And he asked me what paint style I wanted. I'll get the Sunburst. And he was just amazingly gracious and really complimentary. And he knew he was going to be helping give me a boost by writing this article. And so he titled the article, Tim Fagan is a Winner. Which is, it's amazing. And that prompted me to wrap up some songs I was working on, put out an EP, and sort of time it with the launch of that article. And it really did set off a bunch of dominoes where the night of that CD release party, I was introduced to someone who was managing Colby Calais, and I was later introduced to Colby, and then we got to know each other and tour together and write a hit song together.
This song, because you wrote Lucky, Jason Mraz, Colby Calais.
Yeah.
But when you hear them talk about the song, it doesn't make any sense to me because they wrote it over email.
Oh, yeah,
you guys.
Yeah.
Like, how did you guys write this song?
It was crazy. And it kind of fits the song, it turns out, in that it's a song about, people that miss each other long distance. And essentially, I'm on the road with Colby as her guitarist, and she gets an email out of the blue from Jason saying, like, hey, Colby, like, welcome to pop music. I love your record. Yeah. Do you want to do a duet? And so he sent this demo, this sort of guitar vocal that was great. It had the hook of the chorus, but there were a lot of these sort of loose ends to it. And Colby was like, she knew me first and foremost as a songwriter. So she's like, Tim, do you want to work on this song? I was like, yeah, of course I do. But there was no implications of anything other than that, like, we'll see if we can finish it. We're really busy playing all these shows. So over the course of a couple months, I would sort of work on parts of it and sing it into GarageBand. And
like, what would you work on? Like, because what would you have? Like, you would take his hook?
His hook and his guitar vocal, and then I would sort of like learn it and rearrange it, and then I would just continue writing the song. And at that time, like in the back of the tour bus, we were watching these old movies, and there's that Steve Martin movie, The Jerk, one of his first, classics. And there's a scene that's really sweet. He's walking down the beach with the love interest, Bernadette Peters, and they're singing this old jazz tune where it's like, I know. And they're singing this counter melody. It's like really sweet. And I was like, man, I don't hear that anymore these days, like where there's a duet where people are singing in like opposite motion. So I wrote that as like the whole bridge of Lucky. We presented that to Jason like a couple months later in San Diego when we were there. So it really was like a montage of like, it started as an email, and then like we sent him back an MP3. He found a singer to sort of like sing the updated demo with some drums. We played it for him backstage, and cut to us in London another month later, and they cut the vocals, and he was recording the whole record there. And then it came out as the follow-up single to I'm Yours, which was completely wild.
Tim, I'd be thinking, I got to get this right. Like, this, I have to get on this song. This song, this has, no. Like, how, like, was that what you were thinking?
No. You were zero guile. I was just thinking, like, this is funny. I'll put the Steve Martin thing in it, and then we'll do this, and then we'll sing about, flowers and palm trees.
It didn't occur to you that, like that song is ubiquitous. Like, everybody knows that song. It didn't occur to you that you were like, I've got two big stars here.
No.
I have to get this song right. I have to get a song on the album. Like,
ignorance was complete bliss. I knew nothing about that, or I had a sense that it was an amazing opportunity, but I was yet to enter into the realm of publishing and being a so-called professional songwriter. I was just doing stuff that I would follow my interests, and not to make it sound like it was just like, oh, no big deal, but like I worked really hard on it and contributed in a way where the three of us really made it, I think, sound like, it sounds like the song it is because it brings out what's great about their style of singing, and it's really sweet. And there's been so many people that have told me that it's their wedding song or the song that they had with their sweetheart when they were a long distance relationship. But there was no sense that it was even going to make the record, much less be a single. So it was the little song that could, and we were just all, thrilled when it kind of...
Do you still see checks for that song?
Yeah. I mean, it still puts some food and some... on the table and some dog food in the bowls and the lights on above my head. But it was a godsend in terms of like having a livelihood out there as a professional. And so my life after touring, it turns out I wasn't so much a road dog as I maybe thought I was going to be. I was much more happy in the studio and writing. So it gave me that foundation to be able to kind of go into full throttle of that mode. You know,
what is the guitar part in that song? You have to be able to show it better than anyone. Do you not know? I mean, you don't know.
No, I mean, it's really just, I mean, it's mostly just kind of it's in C and it's just sort of bouncing on the chords, you know? And I've, through the years, kind of worked out my own arrangement, but it's just like Mraz had a great, like, way of finger picking and stuff like that. And it's just, it's a fun set of changes, you know, like an A minor to a D, A minor, D minor, just real happy.
Yeah. Go home and learn Lucky. You gotta hear that song everywhere, right?
Oh yeah, it's an honor. And whenever I hear it coming out of the speakers in the ceiling, like in the hardware store or wherever that might be, it's like, yeah, all right, you know. If somebody's around me that knows me, they punch me in the arm. They're like, hey, do you get paid for that? I'm like, kind of, yeah,
kind a little bit.
One day, yeah,
a little bit,
of a sliver, but yeah, it's great.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah. So okay. So now, YouTube channel, guitar teacher.
Yeah.
Who taught you guitar? Like, I've got some guitar teachers that really pissed me off, and I look back on them, and I go, they had it so wrong. And that, to me, would maybe motivate me to want to teach someone a little better with a little bit of a different attitude. Like, anything like that happen to you?
I was fortunate. I think probably, like, truly the biggest thing for me was that I didn't even consider picking up a guitar until my friends started playing guitar when we were all around, like, 14. And so it was literally something where maybe they showed me an A chord, and even then I was just kind of like, whatever. I was sort of like playing bongos on the empty guitar case. And I think one day my mom picked me up, and I think she had the good sense to be like, you know, I bet he'd be really good at guitar, and I don't know if I want to raise the kid who's playing bongos on the guitar case, so let's get him a guitar. And she surprised me with a beginner $99 acoustic guitar. And for some reason, it was like all the music that I had been listening to growing up. I've been listening to a bunch of Stevie Ray and a bunch of, like, of that era. It would be like, you know, like the pop of, like, Steve Winwood and Bruce Hornsby and Van Morrison and Ray Charles. And so there's all this good music that I had been checking out. And then when I finally got a guitar and got a good teacher, it was just this guy who was nearby the music shop, and he was recommended, and his name's Jimmy Funai. And he was just really chill. He was a professional. Like, he was playing gigs. I grew up in Hawaii, so he was playing a lot of gigs.
You grew up in Hawaii?
Yeah. It's sort of a bit of an odd and fun detail. And so he was just really laid back and really great sort of jazz and pop player. And the fact that I had my lesson every Saturday with Jimmy, and I had friends that were getting into it too, it just had that right sort of backdrop of, like, well, I don't want to let Jimmy down. I don't want to show up and be empty-handed. And I just dug into it, and I think, yeah, when I look back on it, it was mainly just that sense that he was going to help me dig into the stuff that I was having trouble with and clear up any blocks. And then he'd give me a bunch of chord voicings usually that were really, like, exotic and really helped me sort of, like, open up my sort of palette of colors. You know?
Yeah.
But there wasn't a lot of sort of rigorous structures of, like, you got to do this, and if you don't know that, you know, learn this or else. There wasn't really any of that.
See, I had this group of friends. We were all playing guitar together and learning, and you needed that because one of my friends would get a little bit better than me, and that would really piss me off.
Yeah.
And then I would try to, like, learn the songs that they were playing, or I'd try to figure out what they were doing, and then vice versa. And then, you know, there was this good competitive energy. But when I sort of realized, I was like, I thought every one of my friends was going to do guitar professionally.
Right.
When I realized that I was the only one that was thinking about it, it was so weird to me. I was like, what do you mean? Like my friend Jesse went on to become an engineer. And when he was like, I'm not going to go to music school, I'm going to become an engineer, I was like, are you crazy?
Yeah.
Like, that was so confusing to me that I was so much more into it than everyone else was, even though we all seemed to be
doing it. It seems at the time.
Doing it.
I had that moment, too, where it was like we were all in, and we had a band, and like we were writing songs. And there was, I think, a moment where one of my friends was like, well, you know, you're just going to do this for a few years, right? And then you'll, like, be the classic person who gives up guitar.
Yeah.
And I was just like, no. And I wasn't even that, like, outraged. I was just more like, just sort of like, oh, no, this is me now. Like, this is the thing.
Yeah.
And there's been definitely times through, like, I went off to university and I got a degree in graphic design, which it turns out I use every day now with all the YouTube stuff. But there was sort of like weaving on the path, but it was always like, no, guitar is at the heart of what I love. it was where it all started. Writing songs came a couple years after that, which I'm kind of grateful for too, because I could just geek out on the, you know, playing and recording on a cassette four track, and just sort of getting lost in the sort of like playing with the paint, basically, of making sounds on a guitar. So that when a life of music sort of evolved, it turned out that like I just had a lot of these things that I had been passionate about that I could then get hired for. Like, you know, you become sort of like, well, I guess I could do this. I guess I could play guitar in someone's band, or I guess I could write a song, or I guess I could record music for a commercial or whatever it is. And it was just nice that a lot of that wasn't planned. It was just sort of stitched together from just going down the rabbit hole, you know?
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, what's the next lessons that we're putting on the YouTube channel? We're bringing it back to the lessons. What we got? What we got, Tim?
Let's go scale on a string here.
Scale on a string. Let's hear it.
So just along one string.
Show me a little something fun here. Yeah. Break it down.
Yeah, I mean, so like if we just take the B string and we're just sort of like droning between the E and the B string. And you just sort of test your ear, and sometimes we get a little bit stuck into being like, what scale are we in? What mode are we in? And it's like, if you just take it one flavor at a time, if we have E, if we sort of start with a sort of like the sort of the Hey Joe area or the Pride and Joy, and then just build up from that. There's the two in relation to that one, if that's the E. And then if you go up to that G sharp, you've got that major third sound. And so between the zero and the 12th fret, we can spell out like a whole string of a scale. So if we did the whole E major scale just laid out, it's a lot easier to see.
Isn't that the best trick ever?
Yeah, and it gives you
this
sound.
This one move? Yeah.
Right.
Right there.
Right.
That's the best thing you can do on a guitar. You can't do that on any other instrument.
Yeah.
That's a guitar thing right there.
Right.
Ready to go.
Right. And if you're looking for something to be like, oh, what's going to sound cool, so often something that uniquely a guitar can do will be the thing that grabs someone's ear.
What's the, how do you play the intro to Jenny 3/6? It's right in there, right?
Something like that. Right. Yeah. Something I was doing today where it's like, let's say we took like the, like we're doing like an E minor blues. And then just chromatically,
that works.
Yeah, just that fun kind of like based off, and those little nuggets that are like, yeah. Yeah, and so something that comes up a lot is that people want to be able to mix different like major and minor blues. They hear about that a lot, and then they sort of get hung up. Again, there's sort of a phase in learning on YouTube where it's like, all right, just tell me what the right notes are. I don't want to play the wrong notes. There's a sort of fear of hitting a wrong note. And then they hear somebody who's mixing like minor pentatonic with major pentatonic side by side. And they like that, but they have this sort of like, they've set up in their head, well, it's either one or the other. Like, and if you choose the wrong one in a given song, there's a fear that they're going to hit a wrong note. So then I'll usually get put on the spot being like, all right, I like it, but what key are we in? And it's like, it's kind of a blend. So if you get something going that's like, you know, if I were to play like just sort of a like an E kind of vamp that is not fully going like E minor and not completely going E major, but like, you know, think of a dominant seven. Over that, I can do like,
yeah, you mix the two together. Yes.
Yeah, and if you start to trust that confidence that the major third and the minor third, I always describe it as like they have a sound, they have a flavor, and I'm always big on analogies that sometimes break down, but it's like if you're a chef and you're reaching for your favorite spice, it's like now's time for a dash of cayenne here, and it, you know how much and how little to kick it up just based on what you're feeling, what you're vibing in the moment. You know?
The way that someone, like, this was something that always confused me, and I don't even know if I still understand it, but I accept it as a rule, which is the major, if you think about the major third, minor third, if you're playing something in Mixolydian, both are probably going to work.
Right.
If you're playing something in major, play with it. The major third, probably, if you're playing something in minor, though, that's really a minor key.
Yeah.
You can't hit that major third. And why you can do it in major, but you can't do it in minor, I don't know why.
We may never know.
Other than it just sounds horrible.
Yeah, we should know. Yeah.
And the key is, if you don't know if you're in a major key or a minor key or whatever,
just try it one time.
It's like, yeah, it's like
put that major third in, and you'll know.
You'll know
if you can use it or not.
Yeah, and I love that encouragement to be like, just play a wrong note. Like, look over your shoulder if you need to, and be like, can I do this? It's like, yeah, you can intentionally test the waters, play a wrong note, and if you're trying to find the key of like a jam track or something, if it's going along and you're trying to find it, go ahead and find it until you think you have the home note, and then test the major, the minor, third to be like, well, the minor kind of works, the major definitely doesn't, and then you'll immediately have that way to lock in and then just get out of that sort of logical side of your brain and get back into the flow,
which is the goal. Right. Yeah. Give us another guitar. Is it the opening? This one, so I use this all the time.
Oh yeah,
that opening. I mean, that's the most guitar sound ever.
Oh, it is.
What else do we have? What's another guitarism thing?
Okay, so going down to the lower register.
Yeah, let's get low.
I love shell chords and these voicings where we can just get three notes and have this really sort of hip, you know, sophisticated harmony. So like with that recipe of just, if we have a D right here, we have the root, the D, we have that minor third, and we have the flat seven. And it's just beautiful, and it's got this sort of enchanting sound. It doesn't have to necessarily be jazz, but it could be. And then if you go to, like, following that recipe, all I'm doing with each one of these chords is taking some root, some third, and some seven. And then if you have that understanding that it's almost like toggle switches, we're like, okay, I got the root. That's not going anywhere. If I wanted to make this, instead of a minor seven, make it a dominant seven, you just have to click that switch from minor third to major third.
Right.
And the same is true for that seven. If I went from the minor third to the major third and then made that flat seven a major seven, you've got this really nice different chord. So when people are sometimes hesitant about seventh chords because they think like, oh, it's all these different things, it's just overwhelming. It's like you can build these really hip sounding, like warm, simple shapes that are just all three notes involved.
Right. And
then that's the type of thing where you can kind of like, you know, punch above your pay grade or whatever the term would be, where you're just like, you know, I don't know exactly what I'm doing here, but I'm just sort of following these shapes, and like you can have a little riff that you made up that is like, you know, not from your standard stock choices that you thought. Sometimes you think the menu only has certain things available to you at a certain point, and then you get shown something like, you mean I could do this, and then I could do that. Yeah, yeah. Right, you mix one of those fancy ones in your usual diet, and then you're like, whoa, you know, like it's a curveball.
Yeah. That's always a good one. That's a great one.
I like that. Double stops are fun too. Like the middle strings, I've done a whole sequence. Like, so my whole format is workouts, because years ago I was doing a little bit of the CrossFit stuff. I got roped into going to CrossFit, and at the end of like an hour of like jumping on boxes and throwing medicine balls against the wall or whatever it was, all these freaky exercises, I was like totally like, I was out of excuses and my mind was blank, and I was grateful that someone else had made decisions for an hour so that I didn't have to. And that's the idea. I was like, why doesn't someone do this for guitar? Because I was like, I just get so tired of having to decide what to practice and how to practice
it. I struggle with that too.
Yeah.
Like even at a higher level, I feel like that doesn't go away.
No,
I'm like, what should I do today? I have no clue.
It's like, I could do this. I kind of like that. And then I get into like, I think I'm probably good on that. It's like, am I though? I don't know. But if someone were to come and be like, do this, I'd be like, yes, sure.
Yeah.
And so that idea of just structure, you don't have to have a thought in your head and you don't know what you're going to get. But it's always like, as long as you trust your coach, like it's like you're going to choose something good, then it can be kind of niche, where I'd spend a whole week saying, all right, we're just going to focus on the middle strings. We're going to look at double stops, and that'll be the theme of the week, which could go a lot of different ways. So maybe we're doing like, you know, thirds and stuff like that. Maybe it was like the fourths that come right out of, but just the fact that I was in charge and saying for 20 minutes, we're just going to focus on like, you know, droning on an A and like sounding out the notes of a A major pentatonic across those strings, you know?
Yeah.
And then people start to hear something they've heard somewhere else, and like, oh, that's like ZZ Top, or that's like, or a nice sweet
kind of Hear Me Knockin' or something. Yeah.
And when that light bulb goes off, then they feel like, okay, I'm in the running to maybe sound like the music that I've always loved. And it didn't have to be some huge lesson of like, let's tackle pentatonics, all five shapes everywhere, and then you can have your dessert. It's more like we're going to sneak in a bit of the ice cream, a bit of the vegetables at once. You know?
Right. This is always a good one too. If you've got if you just have a power chord, here's a C power chord, and you can just go up to over the third.
Oh my God! Yeah,
that right there.
That's
You're a god.
Yeah, I've taught that. I've taught that more than everything. I feel like you maybe did your research.
That's your move, right?
Right. like, okay, so in the as you know, in the slew of like, oh, I'm putting out just tons of content, not going to worry about what this, that, or the other one does. The one that performed the highest for me that was like, whoa, okay, so that struck something, was just like, and it starts with me basically talking like this, being like, I can't stress enough how often I use that. And it's like,
that's the greatest guitar move
ever,
right?
Right. And you just want to give that to people and be like, look, enjoy, like, do this for 2 years, report back to me. You're going to find so much mileage just playing along with tasty major chords. You can do the minor equivalent of it too. Like, if it was the, and if I can get people to like just sort of take that and run with it and not get too stiff about thinking like it's a chord and then it's like, nah, just Hendrix, just let it be fills, let it be chords.
Well, that's so everywhere, because it's, you know, you could think of it here, but then if you do want to get into there, you've got it right here. But then if you come up here,
right
there, and then you've got,
yeah.
Like, it's you can find it everywhere. Yeah, you can go forever with that.
Yeah,
like,
it's your gateway into the sort of diagonal pentatonic thing, but then you can hang out for a while. Like, you can, what I think of as like islands, you can kind of scoot into the sort of, you know, caged alert, the sort of the G-shaped island and have all that, and then you scoot up into this box. And you should have your favorite sort of, like, if it were a skateboard trick, you've got your ollies that you can do here, you got whatever the terms are. Like, you can do certain moves in certain parts of these, you know, of these scales and these shapes that own them, just claim them, play them until you can do them without thinking, and then they're there when you need them, when you have a split second to go for it. You know,
the other one too that's really fun is if you just think about the shapes. So here's a C chord up here with a little D shaped C chord.
Yeah, I gotcha.
And if you just think about bending up to those notes, you then get all the fun steel licks.
Right.
Or if you just think about, here's the chord, and if you think about, how do I bend up to that note?
Right.
That classic lick that I'm not even doing in tune, but
that's
fun for people to play around with too, I think.
Yeah, bends, and just basically starting with like, what's the note that I hear that I want, and then how could you sneak up to it? Yeah. Right. Yeah, and a big influence for me is like the Knopfler style of things, and that's like the getting into the fingerstyle stuff, which is just so much fun. And there's been a lot of times through the years where I've sometimes used a thumb pick, and sometimes gotten into like the Chet Atkins thing. Like for me, it was kind of like the Chet side of my brain and the Stevie Ray. And so I'm always mesmerized when people have a technique of like flipping the pick and like holding it. And at the moment, I'm doing something that I saw Robin Ford doing, and I use these sort of big picks so that I can avoid dropping it, basically. Yeah. Or if it turns around, it's always the same side. But that'll get into the hybrid picking stuff, which is like just great to be able to mix that together with the straight picking. And to get into those six and be able to get that the finger, the sound of the fingertips on the string is just unique.
It's totally a thing.
Yeah.
The Knopfler thing too, you know what I always do if I'm like, I need to play a lick and I just need to fill space and it needs to sound really flashy,
right,
is the ending of Songs of Swing where it's digga digga digga
digga. Right.
But I use that, so like, I was just out on the road with someone and I was doing this lick, which was
Yeah.
And I had a little more gain on it, so it was like, and everyone was like, what is that lick? And I don't think it's that hard. Like, it's sort of like, and I'm hybrid picking it. I definitely, like, that in my head, even though it's not the same lick, that's the Songs of Swing outro lick, basically.
Right.
Like,
I've always thought that song is a quintessential, like, it seemed like in that era, like, the solo would become the best as the fade was happening. So as it's going out, you're, like, turning the volume up to, like, here, like, when he does that lick, and then it continues on, like, every bit of that solo is singable, and everybody's kind of waiting for that, like, and it's just such, when you can get that kind of, like, just those kind of patterns. And there's certain things that's the kind of thing where I did a sequence of 11 Lifesaver licks with this whole idea that we're talking about, where it's like, these are some go-to licks, and by the way, I want to learn more of your Lifesaver licks. But like, the last one that I had was like the Freebird one, which is like, just like, just have it, just lean into, that's a guitar thing you can do, that if you're locked and loaded in your mind of pentatonic, you can just lay that sauce on and sort of just enjoy, and people are going to be like, whoa, you know.
Okay, we're wrapping up here with guitar friend Tim.
Here's what we're going to do. We're going to do a Lifesaver lick shootout, okay? We'll do
nice.
Two or three each, okay?
Nice.
We'll start with you because you brought it up.
Okay.
You, give us a Lifesaver lick right here to go out on.
Okay.
We'll go back and forth a couple times. We'll do a couple licks.
Just to be clear, in my book, Lifesaver is not flashy McGee. It's more like, hey, you know, I'm dropped into a jam, and one thing I know for sure is I know how that lick is going to sound.
Work.
Yep. Yeah, it lands in my head, and I got it as a phrase. I'm throwing that into the pot. So that's just G.
That's one.
You can branch off,
Brilliant Lifesaver lick.
Yeah.
The one that, to me, if I want a little bit of flash, and I go, I don't know what the hell I'm doing, but I want to give a little bit of flash, pentatonic, if you're just playing octaves, I'll do it in G. Just go like this.
Oh, yeah.
It sounds so dumb when you play it, but if you do... You can do this all night.
Right.
And then mess around with the other pentatonic licks.
Right.
If you slide into it, too, it's a totally different lick.
Right.
Brilliant Lifesaver
lick.
You
gotta slide into it.
You gotta slide into it, right?
And then do the, like,
My God. Yeah. Right there. That's a Lifesaver lick. Okay, give us another one. Give us another one.
A little of the sort of tasty, like sort of in that, the B.B. King, the sort of gravity. Just to get into that singing spot where you could set up camp there, make it sweet, make it soulful, and they could look at you and be like, all right, you said something.
Yep.
You
know, with
a couple notes, you know.
Okay, one more, and then we're going to wrap it up here. Give us the last Lifesaver lick, Tim. Somebody's going to need this lick, and it's going to save them.
It's going to keep
the gig. They're about to get fired. And this lick is going to make them keep the gig.
They're staring across.
No pressure, Tim. What is the lick? Give us the Lifesaver lick here. Yeah.
Again. It's not about melting faces
as much. I mean, it is a little bit, isn't it? Oh, that's a great one, right?
Because if you got a bit of that, you could do it. But if I'm in doing like a D minor thing, I could be doing my usual. So that's that kind of droning root note up top. And then you're just playing like down low, but. Those little kind of
how good is that? How good is that?
And then you're good to go. Yeah.
That's ripping.
Just a bit of stank on it, you know.
Tim Fagan, guitar friend Tim, check out. I'm looking to camera now. This guy's got a great YouTube channel. If you're trying to learn guitar, or if you know guitar, you want these daily workouts, stuff to keep you motivated. I feel like I have to go through some of your stuff and some of your videos.
You're in the community, man.
I'm in the community, so I should do these daily live streams, right?
Is that
every day you're on doing live streams where you're telling people what to practice, what to do.
Yeah. Dude. We hang out. We got a little bit of a workout plan, and then we just get back at it, you know, 5 days a week. And then you get the weekends off to just digest.
Weekends off. Yeah. This is not like a crazy, you know, work schedule here. Right. 5 days a week, you can do this.
Yeah.
Tim, on the podcast, thanks for coming on, man.
Thanks for having me, Zach.
Dude, we'll do it again.
I would love to.
Tim Fagan, guitar friend Tim, go follow the YouTube channel. You can check out his community and become a part of his community. There you go. Have we left anything out?
No. More on the way, but this has been a great start.
Absolutely.
Yeah.